Hi there, listener. Welcome in. This is Strange Stories from Odd Folks with an X. This episode has two stories. First, Mothball City, a bittersweet tale by Lee Hume, read by Ness Rose. Second, That Special Smile, a sad tale by Lee Hume, read by Danny Guarantee. Content warnings for this episode are imaginary friends, dementia, loss. Please remember to take good care of yourself. And with that, why don't we begin?
It's always a little quiet here when one of us is fading. We always fade, you see, but we don't always come back, or sometimes it's just a long time before we do. And even then, the chances of winding up in the same district isn't super high. The agency assigns us based on some complicated algorithms, and if the numbers don't land on you, well, you stay in the closet, so to speak. At least we're dormant while we're not in use. I can't imagine passing all that time still awake and thinking. Anyways, when one of us is on their way back to the closet, we gather around whoever it is, and we hear stories of their kid, from the first day they became their friend, to the day they realized the kid was growing out of them. That's when we fade, you see, when our kid grows out of us. Eventually, they don't want or need us anymore, and then poof! Mothball City till the algorithm pulls us out again. My name's Uggy this time around. They tell us don't get too attached to the name. Each kid gets to give you a new one, just like they decide how you look. But I remember every name, just like I remember every kid. Smoosh, Jackie, Mikey, all of the names stick. Imaginary friend probably sounds like a silly job to some. Those people probably got all grown up and forgot theirs, or maybe they never had one. Not every kid does. But we're important. We can teach a kid all sorts of things, from sharing, to loving, to dealing with bad things happening, to helping them start to figure out who they are. A kid with an agency-approved imaginary friend grows up a little more equipped to handle the big, scary world. My current kid is going to have a tough life. She's growing a mental illness only I know about yet, and her parents aren't going to want to acknowledge it, and it's going to mess her up pretty bad before she finds help. But I'm teaching her to regulate, to spot the triggers and the changes, and that she isn't a bad person because her brain needs some help. On top of that, she's already realizing she's not the right gender, and her parents are not going to enjoy that when it starts to come out either. We all have specialties, you see. I get mental illness, but it usually comes with a side of something else. People aren't usually so simple as to fit in one easy box, you know? But when mental illness is the most major thing they need help with, I'm one of the ones on that list. The agency's algorithms are real good at predicting which specializations are going to be needed. If a kid's going to be bullied or abused, or if they're going to need help when their parents split up, you name it. We've got some friends who are made specially to help them out. All of us were people like you once, people who found our way to the agency. It varies how, but for me, it was a job listing. Travel, helping kids, rewarding role, that sort of thing. I showed up for the interview in this office that had clearly just been rented for the day, and they offered me the job. Then they told me what it was, and I laughed in their faces. Figured it was a prank or something. Reckon they're used to that, though. It didn't faze them. They brought me to one of these places like they've brought you. Showed me around, let me talk to some friends. If you choose against the job, they'll wipe this bit from your memory. For safety, you understand. Once I figured it was real, I took the job. They put me to sleep and did whatever it is they do to make me a friend and give me all the info I need. I was a social worker with a degree and all in my other life, and so they specialized me the same way and sent me out to my first kid. I've been to a lot since then. I help all of them as much as I can for as long as I can, and then I just hope it was enough. I don't get to find out how things go, and I'm not allowed to look them up later. Instant mothballing for good if I did that. Sometimes you do stumble across yours in the wild, though, and get a few moments to see how they are. And sometimes you'll be called into an intergenerational job where you help the kid, or grandkid, or great-grandkid, or whatever of the kid you helped before. usually because the story of their friend was passed down, and the new kid calls for you. If that happens and you're not already on assignment, you'll get woken up and dropped right in. My current kid has kept hold of me longer than most do. She knows she's gonna have it tough and she's needed someone on her side, but eventually we all have to go. If the kid doesn't let go of us, we get taken away. They all gotta stand on their own eventually. I probably have a few more weeks, yet maybe even a couple of months. But she's looking for me less and less. Her attention is going where it should be as she grows up, on the solid world. Soon it'll be me in that circle, telling my last stories as I fade away, and then, boop! Mothballs till the next time the algorithm picks me up. I love all my kids. I wonder who the next one will be. Anyways, time to join the circle before this friend fades out. I hope the rest of your tour goes well. Maybe I'll see you around sometime, whoever I am.
I never meant to fall in love. Meant to? I never wanted to. There was no hole in my heart, no hole in my life which needed another person. I just never really thought about it. Once in a while, someone else would enter, move on, step in, or exit a relationship, and I saw it, but I never thought to maybe apply that stuff to myself. I was mostly oblivious to it. I sure as heck never saw you coming. I don't remember the moment we met. It was just another moment. I'd stay at work, if pushed, but only because that makes logical sense. There were other people there, but I don't remember them either. I don't even remember what we first talked about. I remember knowing things about you, things you liked. I remember paying more attention to those things, so we had something to chat about. But that wasn't odd, it was just something I did with people I enjoyed talking to. I'm trying to remember where we were, what was happening, the first time I realized. I have a vague recollection of someplace busy, work again maybe, perhaps one of the bars we used to hang out in, I don't know. I don't remember what I said, but I remember your laugh, your smile. My heart stopped just long enough for me to realize that you were beautiful, and that being the cause of that smile made me unreasonably happy. I started to think then, every time I saw you, maybe that smile you gave me was different somehow to the smile you gave everyone else. Maybe it lingered a moment longer. Maybe the eye contact we made was a shade deeper. Maybe it was just a little brighter. Maybe there was a special smile that you saved only for me. Or maybe it was all in my head. How on earth would I know? It wasn't exactly my area of expertise. I sat on this for a long time. Embarrassingly long, actually. I sat through friends despairing of my, now slightly feigned, lack of interest in dating. I sat through the questions and encouragements, few friends I confided in that I had feelings for someone, declining to tell them who it was, and flat out refusing to make my feelings known. Because no matter how much I tried to convince myself about that smile, I was never quite sure. The thing is, we were friends. It seemed stupid to me to risk ruining that, for something that would pass in time, as I believed all love eventually did. So, I sat on it, and I said nothing. Weeks, months, a couple of years went by, and I didn't dwell on it much. It was a thing that was. I loved you, but I was too afraid to find out if there was any chance you could love me. What we had was too good to throw away. I was okay with that. I saw people come and go from your life, Some left you broken, some better off. But every one of them left, and I stayed. I suppose at some point you became conscious of that. You never told me how you realized, and I wish I'd asked. I suppose it doesn't matter now. Just curious, really. Still, however it happened, and you had rather more courage than I ever did. This I remember. We were walking home from one of our regular bars. There was a point a little more than halfway where you would turn one way and I turned another, and we'd head our separate ways home. Except this time when I turned to say goodnight, you didn't say a word. Didn't even look at me. You just slid your hand into mine and kept walking with me. I remember how it felt to hold your hand. I remember the noise our footsteps made, the slightly out of sync double thump of our shoes hitting the pavement. I remember the feeling of my heart beating so hard in my chest, I wanted to put my hand over it to stop it from escaping. I remember the tingle as your bare arm touched mine. At my door, I turned to you and you were ready, giving me that smile, that special smile. You said, "Go on, I'm right behind you." I fumbled the keys into the lock. Every part of me felt heavy, clumsy, stupid. But I got the door open and we climbed the stairs. Two flights of you right behind me. This was far from your first visit here. You knew what to expect. That is, nothing special. I'd long gotten past the self-consciousness I usually felt when people came into my space. While I stood stupidly, waiting to see what you were going to do, you strolled to the kitchen, knowing there would be beer in the fridge, grabbed us a couple and finding the opener faster than I ever can, despite that it's been kept in the same compartment of the same drawer for the entire time I've lived here. I'd always loved the way you seemed to know my space better than I did. It felt like you were at home there, and that meant a lot. You handed me my beer and we drank in silence, standing in the middle of the living room. We drained the bottles and you brushed my hand as you took mine, rinsing them both out and dropping them into the recycling bin. Still not saying a word, you came back and stood in front of me, your head tilted sideways a little, like you were trying to decide something. I barely dared breathe in case it somehow broke the spell. But then you smiled, as if decided, and kissed me. The next morning, we woke up tangled together in my bed. The smell of your skin, your hair, was all around me. I lay there for as long as I could pretend to still be asleep, just to feel your skin on mine, to listen to you breathe, to be sure that this was all real. And it was real, and so good. Those holes in my heart, in my life, that were never there, you slipped into them perfectly, somehow, and always with that special smile, just for me. There was surprise. Some of it was about the speed with which I went from completely solo to a totally comfortable half of a couple. I think a lot of it was about the fact that of all the people you could have been with, you'd chosen me. But the surprise faded, the doubts were proved wrong, and we endured. We never married, we never had kids. The sex we had wasn't always with each other, but we never concealed it. And we always knew who we belonged to. We always knew where home was. And always, at the end of all else, good and bad, you and I were together. You didn't just find your place in my heart. You were my heart. You made love make sense to me. And you know, I never stopped getting that tingle when your skin touched mine. But all that was so long ago. So far away in years and in miles. And now I sit here, holding your hand, listening to the staccato beep of that machine. How much it sounds like our footsteps that night. How much you still look and feel like the person I loved for so long. I wait with the tiniest, most desperate hope that you might open your eyes and look at me again. I would give anything just to see that smile. That special smile. One last time.
Mothball City and That Special Smile, written by Lee Hume, read by Ness Rose and Danny Guarantee. If you're LGBTQIA2S+, and you'd like to submit a story for use, we'd love to hear from you. Check the show notes for a link to do that. Also in the show notes, links to the music and sound effects and where to find us. The show is produced by Tracy Clifton, Lexi Jones, and Lee Hume. Intro and outro read by me, America Young. This has been a Team Cuddles production, part of the Fun Installers Network.